Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, May 19th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, new Humboldt light control law advances to SUPES. Students for a Democratic Society plans a march and threatens legal action over Eureka City Council Bill 1040. And back-to-back homicides at remote Mendocino cannabis sites under investigation. Stay tuned, news on the stories and more coming right up. Light pollution is the target of new Humboldt County regulations. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County is on its way to being the only local jurisdiction that limits the amount of light that can be emitted outdoors, with the Planning Commission supporting a draft ordinance that aims to reduce light pollution. Having shaped a version in a workshop last month, the Commission took up the ordinance again at its May 15th meeting and reached consensus on recommending Board of Supervisors approval. With the ordinance in place, the county will be able to take permitting and complaint response actions to control light trespass, a term referring to lighting that leaves a property and illuminates another. A key provision is limits on lumens, the brightness or intensity of light. The ordinance sets a residential limit of 1,000 lumens and a 3,000 lumen commercial limit. If the ordinance is approved by supervisors, that will distinguish the county area from cities like Arcata and Eureka, which don't have lumen limits. During a sparsely attended public comment period, Arcata agriculturist Shale Peck Krause vouched for controlling light pollution.
I am grateful every time I have to walk out at night to check on my animals, which happens a lot during the wintertime since the days are so short. I'm grateful to be able to look up into the sky and see stars, see meteors, satellites. It's such a precious resource that is not available to so many people who live in areas of light pollution. Sometimes when there's a ball game over in the stadium, like a third of the sky gets light pollution. And that's always a bummer, but it always reminds me to be really grateful for the fact that, like, most nights we have really great stars.
The ordinance's text says control of lighting will be done through reasonable design standards, including shielding, height maximums, and directing lighting downward. Under the ordinance, lighting is required to be fully shielded to preclude light glow above the fixture and from going beyond the intended area of illumination. When commissioners did a line-by-line review of the ordinance, the lumen limits were primary points of discussion, particularly the residential limit. Commission Chair Ivor Skavdal supported the idea of controlling light, but he also supports having enough of it.
We're not lighting experts here. I'm going under the assumption that somebody's 1,000 lumen front porch light is going to provide enough lighting for them to be able to walk up the steps safely or down the steps safely in their house and those types of issues. So I think that, you know, that's what we're trying to do. Is we're not trying to have too much lighting, but we need to have enough lighting in some of these circumstances for security or safety.
While the commercial lumen limit can be exempted if so decided through a conditional use permit process, the residential limit is firm. Planning Director John Ford explained why.
Our thinking is that illumination of an entire site is far less necessary in a residential setting than in a commercial setting. And so we are absolutely wanting to say in a residential setting, we're not creating a process that you can illuminate your whole yard and turn it into a parking lot or whatever. That's not to say that, you know, if like on your front door, that you can't put two lights, one on each side of the door, to make sure that you've got a good illuminated area walking in. We're just not going to have excessively bright lights.
But the lumen limit was questioned in the case of larger rural residential and agricultural properties. Commissioner Thomas Mulder, a cannabis farmer, said he works at night at times and uses headlamps that are as bright as 3,000 lumens. Commissioners agreed to add agricultural to the categories of properties with the higher 3,000 lumen limit. Written public comment includes concerns about illumination from streetlights, but that's regulated under a special district process administrated by the county's Department of Public Works and approved by the Board of Supervisors. But heeding the public input, commissioners agreed to send a memo to the Board of Supervisors indicating that streetlight illumination is a concern among commissioners and the public. Commissioners unanimously voted to recommend the ordinance for approval by the Board of Supervisors. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Eureka City Council is holding a follow-up meeting regarding the vote for Bill 1040. Bill 1040 is part of a municipal code that revises two previous bills that would include the ordinances of the sit or lie on a sidewalk as well as the camping. Miles Slattery, the Eureka City Manager, explains the ordinance as a way of helping those who are in the homeless community and might not have received or know how to receive help figure out resources to better help the members in their surroundings.
The reason this has come forward is because after going through all of that for the past 10 years and trying to help these community members, we have recognized that there's a very small population of those communities, members experiencing homelessness, that these principles that we're implementing aren't reaching. So the intent of this ordinance is to address those individuals, the small portion of this population, that are in those situations. It's another resource to help us better our community and better those community members' lives.
Rick Toledo, a lead organizer for SDS, the Students for a Democratic Society, released a press release today stating they are willing to pursue litigation if the Eureka City Council approves of Bill 1040.
We hope to sway them so that this doesn't become something where we need to go all in on litigation and figuring out all of those details. But it's something that we're prepared to do, and we've already begun talking to some progressive lawyer associations about that. So it's something that conversations are already happening, but we're hoping that that's not what we have to do. We're hoping that when the community turns out in force for this and we voice our opposition, that they will hopefully put an end to this. Because in areas like San Francisco, where we've seen these laws before, it actually ended up costing the city far more money to pursue criminalization than it would have to just give people houses and resources. So they're actually shooting themselves in the foot.
Toledo mentions Governor Gavin Newsom's new state model that addresses encampments throughout the state. Some policies in this new state model include a prohibition on persistent camping in one location, a prohibition on encampments that block free passage on sidewalks, and a requirement that local officials provide notice and make every reasonable effort to identify and offer shelter prior to clearing an encampment. Toledo further explains that the implications of this bill will further regress any progress of helping community members.
You know, we've also seen Gavin Newsom recently put out a push for more cities to adopt these policies. And we just think that's very backwards, that it's regressive. And all of the data that has been collected by these social workers who've been working with us, it all shows, that this is something that's going to hurt the cities who implement it. It seems like they are favoring the interests of business owners and their immediate interest of sweep these people off the streets. We don't want to see them. We don't want it to hurt tourism. Versus like what's actually good for the community, what's actually good for the most impacted people.
There will be a march held by SDS at 4 p.m. starting at the Holverson Community Park Amphitheater to the Eureka City Hall on May 20th. SDS encourages participants to voice their opposition to Bill 1040 during the 6 p.m. Eureka City Council meeting. Turning to Mendocino, violence has erupted in rural Mendocino County, where sheriff's deputies are investigating two separate homicides connected to cannabis grow sites. The incidents happened just days apart and have prompted a coordinated response from local law enforcement. KMUD's Lauren Schmidt reports.
Two homicide investigations are now underway in Mendocino County. both tied to separate cannabis grow sites in remote regions of northern Mendocino. While these cases are believed to be unrelated, the investigations occurred within 48 hours of each other. Captain Quincy Cromer with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office shares details on the first incident, which occurred outside of Covelo, involving three individuals who suffered gunshot wounds, one of whom died from his injuries.
We were aware of an incident that was reported to us on Wednesday, May 14th of 2025, around just after 9 p.m. And the communications center received a 911 hangup in the area north of Covelo. So the caller that called 911 was an unidentified male who advised they needed help for a friend and then disconnected. Using the technology we have in our dispatch center, they were able to trace the 911 call to the 82,000 block of Mina Road in Covelo. And deputies responded to that area of the 911 hangup near Covelo. And while responding, it's a very remote area of our county. They overheard traffic of another deputy being dispatched to the Adventist Health Ukiah Valley Emergency Room for an adult male subject with possible gunshot wounds. That report occurred on May 14th, just before 11 p.m. So it was 10:55 p.m. when that report came in for the gunshot wound person being transported to the emergency room in Ukiah.
Deputies initially responded to a 911 hangup call northwest of Covelo. While en route, they received word that a gunshot victim had arrived at a hospital in Ukiah. At that time, investigators considered the possibility that the two incidents could be connected.
So the deputies up in Covelo extensively checked the area of Minor Road for the 911 hangup or any evidence related to that. And while on Minor Road, they were contacted by subjects in a vehicle who reported an unresponsive male was located a short distance away on Holes Valley Road. So deputies diverted to there, to the area of Holes Valley Road, about 1 mile from the intersection with Minor Road, and they located an unresponsive adult male on the roadway near two vehicles that were unoccupied and left abandoned on the road. This area was determined to be the 23,000 block of Holes Valley Road.
Deputies then discovered an unresponsive adult male on Holes Valley Road. Captain Cromer says the man had succumbed to his gunshot wounds. Multiple firearms and spent shell casings were found nearby, along with blood evidence that led deputies to believe another victim may still be in the area.
Along the ground, and they followed a blood trail for about a quarter mile, where they located a large marijuana grove with hoop houses and several camp trailers.
Simultaneously, deputies interviewed the individual being treated at the Ukiah Area Hospital to determine how the cases might be connected.
Those deputies interviewed the adult male with gunshot wounds and the subject who transported him to the hospital there in Ukiah. And based on these interviews, deputies determined this investigation was related to the shooting incident and the deceased subject up on Holes Valley Road that was located by Sheriff's Office personnel. Due to the subject at the emergency room having significant injuries, that adult male with gunshot wounds at Adventist Health Ukiah Valley Emergency Room was transported to an out-of-county hospital for further medical treatment.
As the investigation progressed, it became clear the Covelo incidents were part of the same case. Detectives were assigned and a search warrant was executed at the nearby cannabis farm, where additional evidence was recovered. Captain Cromer picks up the story roughly 7 hours after the initial discovery.
While continuing to investigate the area of Minor Road and Holes Valley Road in Covelo, they were trying to canvass the area and attempt to find possible witnesses or other involved subjects. On Thursday, May 15th at about 8:15 in the morning, a deputy located another adult male subject on Holes Valley Road who was approximately 4 miles from the intersection with Minor Road. This adult male subject had numerous apparent gunshot wounds and required emergency medical treatment. An air ambulance was requested and the adult male was airlifted to a different out-of-county hospital for emergency medical treatment. The basic statements that deputy was able to obtain from this person with gunshot wounds indicated they suffered these wounds during the same shooting incident on Holes Valley Road.
At this point, one person is confirmed deceased, and two others, both with gunshot wounds, are considered survivors of the same incident.
So the two subjects with gunshot wounds who were transported to two different out-of-county hospitals are now in stable conditions and have been interviewed regarding this homicide investigation. We are making attempts to identify the decedent, the adult male located on Holes Valley Road. Once that decedent has been identified and their legal next of kin has been notified of their death, we can then release additional information regarding their identity. And a post-mortem examination is being scheduled for the decedent, and the official cause and manner of death will not be released until the pathologist completes their examination and reports.
We asked Captain Cromer whether any of the three individuals are considered suspects or whether they're being treated as victims.
I truly don't know, Lauren. And if you can look at the language used in the press release, it was very vague and ambiguous intentionally because they are subjects with gunshot wounds. But I am not in a position to label them as either suspects or victims at this point. And it's going to take some more investigation to determine what happened as we put those pieces of the puzzle together.
Captain Cromer stated that the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office has confirmed that this case has ties to a drug trafficking organization, although he declined to name which.
So during this investigation, deputies and detectives did uncover evidence which is indicative of illegal marijuana cultivation and sales under the control of a drug trafficking organization, and we are not releasing additional information related to the suspected drug trafficking organization at this time to maintain the integrity of this case. And we are requesting anyone with information related to this investigation to contact the dispatch center at 707-463-4086. You can press option one at any time to speak with the dispatcher. And information can also be provided anonymously by calling the anonymous emergency tip line at 707-234-2100.
While deputies and investigators were still actively working that scene, a second possible homicide was reported. This one on Bell Springs Road, north of Laytonville, near the Island Mountain region.
Yeah, so that one was reported on Thursday, May 15th at about 12:50 p.m., so just after noon. We were still very much actively investigating the other homicide in Covelo at that time. And this one came to our knowledge when a subject from Texas who owns a property in Mendocino County had responded to the sheriff's office in Ukiah to report an incident that reportedly occurred at a property she owns on Bell Springs Road. So this property owner received secondhand information earlier in the week about a worker that she has staying and working at that property, which is the 68,000 block of Bell Springs Road in Piercy, which was also known as the Island Mountain area. The property owner had learned that her worker was either in trouble or possibly murdered at the property. And nobody involved in this entire incident was able to reach this adult male. And the last known contact with the subject living on that property on Bell Springs was approximately May 5th. So it had been about 10 days since anybody had been able to get a hold of this person.
Captain Cromer says a property owner concerned about a missing tenant worker drove for 2 days from Texas to Mendocino County, where they reported the incident to the sheriff's office in Ukiah, at which point she requested a deputy escort to her remote cannabis property to conduct a welfare check on the worker, who she hadn't heard from.
So we obtained further information from the property owner, who advised the property is extremely difficult to access and very remote because it's behind multiple lock gates. So she agreed to respond with us and assist us in accessing the parcel because regular maps and directions were not going to suffice. So it did take our personnel multiple hours to respond to this property. And when they arrived, this is an over 100-acre parcel that they searched for numerous hours. And the property appeared to be utilized for marijuana cultivation. So they extensively searched this large property. And as nighttime hours approached, we continued searching the area down the hill from the residence. And there is a residence at that property with a deck. So on searching this area down the hill, they located apparent human remains, and it appeared those remains were partially concealed with like loose debris and foliage and other brush in attempt to hide that decedent.
As nightfall approached and visibility declined, deputies remained on scene overnight, securing the area and requesting additional resources for the following day.
So investigators and deputies with the sheriff's office, search and rescue personnel from the sheriff's office, and then law enforcement representatives and search and rescue representatives from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office all responded during the early morning hours of Friday, May 16th to continue searching and then to recover the human remains that were located. During those recovery efforts, the decedent was determined to be an adult male, but we have not been able to make positive identification of those remains due to the advanced decomposition that was present and the condition of the remains. So the remains are consistent with the general description, gender, and ethnicity of the missing worker that belonged at that property, but we just haven't been able to positively identify that person at this point. So due to the circumstances learned during this case, and obviously the suspicious nature of those human remains recovered during this incident, it is being investigated as a homicide, and we will release additional information as we're able to identify the decedent and release and notify their next of kin and then release their identification.
Due to the suspicious nature of the discovery, this case is also being investigated as a homicide. A coroner's examination has been scheduled, and more information will be released as it becomes available, according to Captain Cromer.
And again, on this investigation as the other, we are requesting anyone with information to call the dispatch center at 707-463-4086. You can press option one at any time to speak with dispatch. And anyone that wants to provide information anonymously can do so by calling the non-emergency tip line at 707-234-2100.
With two separate homicide investigations tied to cannabis grow sites in the region, we asked whether there could be a connection between the Covelo and Bell Springs cases.
No, we have zero information or any indication that the case from Covelo and the case from Bell Springs are related. There's no evidence whatsoever to suggest they're related. It just happened to be that one was continuing to be investigated into the next day when the second one occurred, and it's, you know, very difficult to actively and effectively investigate two very serious crimes like this. So that's where we started reaching out to our neighboring partners in the district attorney's office and anyone else that could come and assist us, because we were pretty thin, spread pretty thin at that point to already working the Covelo one to have this one in Bell Springs come in.
While these cases may not be connected, Captain Cromer does believe both stem from the cultivation of marijuana.
It is obviously tied to either the cultivation or sales of marijuana because it occurred at a grow property and there was active growing materials and other structures there that we all know based on our training experience are indicative of marijuana cultivation. But unlike the Covelo one, I know we referenced that, but that one definitely seems to be related to the sales and cultivation of marijuana under the control of a drug trafficking organization or operation. Again, I'm putting that out there with the caveat that we're not talking about that anymore at this stage of the investigation to try to maintain the integrity. But the one in Bell Springs, I can't say that we're at that point in the investigation, but it is definitely related to the growing operation and cultivation there at the property. I don't know what led to this person's, this violent incident that led to this person's death, but we are continuing to investigate that. But it is, anytime it's at the site of a grow or a cultivation site, we obviously, in our history and experience, they are often related to that.
When asked about the licensing status of the cannabis operations involved, Captain Cromer said that information was not yet available.
No, nobody's ever been arrested yet, and no charges have been filed with the district attorney. It's a little premature for that so far. As you can tell on the Covelo incident, it's a very convoluted, unclear situation as to what went down there. And we are still very much trying to get a better picture of what occurred and finding anyone that was involved in it or anyone that may have information with it. But again, we interview people and then we have to gauge their truthfulness based on the evidence we have and the other statements we've obtained. So we're sorting through all that right now to say, hey, who's telling us the truth? What statements are coinciding with the evidence we found? And then moving our investigation forward to try to determine who may be the primary aggressor in this incident and who may be responsible for the death that occurred. Because no matter what their involvement is, if somebody gets killed, you know, that's a homicide. And they are then, therefore, now a victim of homicide.
Anyone with information about either of these cases is urged to contact the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office. That number is 707-463-4086. Or you can submit a tip anonymously by calling 707 234 20100. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
In national news, conservative Republicans sink Trump's big, beautiful bill in key House committee vote. Christopher Martinez reports.
On a vote of 16 to 21, the House Budget Committee voted down a centerpiece of the Trump agenda, a 1,116-page budget reconciliation bill aimed at avoiding a filibuster by Democrats in the Senate. Republican Jody Arrington of Texas is the chair of the Budget Committee.
This reconciliation bill is the principal legislative vehicle for advancing the full America First agenda. To realize President Trump's vision and the House Republicans' unwavering commitment to making America safe and prosperous again.
The White House website calls the measure President Donald J. Trump's one big, beautiful bill, boasting that it has the largest tax cut in American history, removes 1.4 million undocumented immigrants, makes border security permanent, modernizes air traffic control, and ends taxpayer-funded sex changes for minors. Democrats were united in opposition. The ranking Democrat on the committee, Brendan Boyle of Pennsylvania, gave his explanation for the Democratic unity.
Besides all of the other important issues involved in this bill, this is the overarching truth. It is the biggest tax cuts for billionaires in American history, paid for by throwing 13.7 million Americans off their health care coverage.
Democratic delegate Stacey Plaskett from the U.S. Virgin Islands was more blunt, saying Republicans are stealing from the poor to give to the rich.
If you want to take away all of those things from the neediest, take away some from the rich as well.
As if Democratic opposition were not enough, while Democrats complained about tax cuts for the rich and program cuts for the poor, Republican Chip Roy of Texas praised the tax cuts, but complained the budget cuts did not go far enough.
This bill falls profoundly short. It does not do what we say it does with respect to deficits. The fact of the matter is, on the spending, what we're dealing with here on tax cuts and spending, a massive front-loaded deficit increase. That's the truth. That's the truth.
That view was shared by other Republicans in the Conservative Freedom Caucus. In the end, the measure failed when four Republicans voted no: Chip Roy, Ralph Norman of South Carolina, Josh Brahine of Oklahoma, and Andrew Clyde of Georgia. Another Republican changed his yes vote to no for procedural reasons. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the committee will reconvene on Sunday in yet another attempt to move forward on the one big, beautiful bill. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Lauren Schmidt, and Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.